Hello, and welcome to this Cancer Network podcast about the current landscape of CAR T-cell therapy in multiple myeloma. I'm Dr. Joshua Richter, Associate Professor of Medicine at the Tisch Cancer Institute, Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, and the Director of Myeloma at the Blavatnik Family Chelsea Medical Center at Mount Sinai.
And my name is Marco Davila. I am a physician scientist as well as service chief for the Lymphoma and Myeloma Adoptive Cell Therapy Service at the Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center in Buffalo, New York.
Today, we'll be discussing practical considerations relating to the use of CAR T-cell therapy in multiple myeloma care, while touching upon impacts on patient care, operational and referral workflows, and access to cellular therapy. So, Marco, let's dive into it. You know, the first question I'll throw to you is, with cilta-cel and ide-cel both FDA approved in earlier lines of therapy, where does CAR T belong in the myeloma sequence? Is earlier better, or, you know, should clinicians give patients a one-shot therapy before moving on to safer options?
Well, in general, I will say earlier is always better. I'll qualify that a little bit. You know, earlier is better because you have time to coordinate. You have your T cells going to be collected are going to be better quality. The risks for toxicities are going to be lower. The disease is more likely to be sensitive. So does that mean every patient absolutely requires it, you know, as a second line? No, it's a individual decision made by the patient, informed by the practitioners, the myeloma and cell therapy team. However, what I will kind of argue for is that earlier evaluation should happen for every patient with myeloma, even if it's a patient that the referrer says there's no way this patient could get a CAR T-cell therapy. I still want to see that patient. I want to be able to discuss it, because sometimes the barriers that might be there in front of the patient are not relevant anymore, because sometimes they could be logistical. The FDA is changing how they manage the risk associated with this therapy, because they're seeing that, hey, it's not as of a concern about some of these risks as when they were first approved. So I would just say earlier evaluation is always better.
Yeah, and I would completely agree. You know, it's, you know, we used to worry in myeloma, should we save something for a rainy day? And, you know, we know that rainy day also doesn't always come. You know, patients in the U.S. only get around 3 to 4 lines of therapy, despite all of these amazing advantages. And I think Marco pointed out something critical is that, you know, as we get into later lines, you know, what's the health of your T cells? What's our ability to control your disease and wait that manufacturing time? Also, medical things happen. What happens if you develop future cardiac issues? So I think I completely agree with your assessment. Is earlier better? In general, yes. But at a bare minimum, you know, to your point, assessment early should be for everyone, because we used to have that old, are you eligible for transplant or not? But I think, you know, there are far fewer patients that are CAR T ineligible compared to auto transplant ineligible.
Yeah, great points. Now I have a question for you, Josh. Yeah. So bispecifics are off the shelf, repeatable and available today without a manufacturing wait. So in a patient who could get either therapy, either a T-cell engager or a cell therapy, what is the case for giving a CAR T-cell therapy instead for that patient? And is that decision clinical or is it operational?
So I think it's a really great question. And, you know, I would say the billion-dollar question in myeloma is sequencing. And, you know, the reality is, you know, this is America. So if a little is good and more is better, more and much more is even betterer. You know, it's not in the myeloma world, do you get CAR T or bispecific? We have many patients that are going to get both. So the question is, what's better first, CAR T and then bispecific, or bispecific then CAR T? And, you know, so far the data, and a lot of this has come out of the UPenn group, has shown that CAR T is better into bispecific than the other way around, with one of the biggest determinants of response of that second treatment being the time in between the attacks on BCMA. That if you give a CAR T that attacks BCMA, you're off therapy for months to years. And if you then come in with a bispecific, that distance in between BCMA attacks is quite long. But if you're getting a BCMA bispecific every week, every other week, or even every month, and you progress, and then you come in for that CAR T, that distance is going to be short. So, you know, to me, you want to give them not just the best therapy now, but in the overall landscape of their journey. To me, that's the reason to give CAR T early on.
Yeah, no, very, very kind of solid points here. And I, you know, I am a cell therapy clinician. So you go to a surgeon, they're going to recommend surgery, right? You go to a medical oncologist, they're going to recommend chemotherapy. You go to a cell therapy person, they're going to recommend cell therapy. But I do believe the data, you know, strongly supports that as being a very good option for many patients. And earlier is better, being able to collect better T cells, better production, lower toxicities. So I want to be able to offer a therapy that can put them in remission for years. You know, median response rate for some of these therapies haven't been reached yet for patients in the second line. So I want to be able to offer that therapy to patients. And I kind of almost think of it a different way sometimes in my mind is going, why can't I give this therapy? You know, why can't I give a cell therapy? What are the reasons I shouldn't do it? You know, there's some that might exist, but I kind of go things from that angle. But my goal is always, I want to consider strongly, and if there's logistical barriers, how can we solve them? If there's clinical barriers, like they have, you know, a cardiomyopathy that might make me worry about risk, can they see a cardiologist, get some medical management that might improve their EF to a little better where I feel more comfortable in terms of their risk? So these are all things that kind of come into play. But, you know, I kind of fall strongly within the cell therapy kind of option.
Agreed. And you already kind of alluded to it that, you know, you go into this construct of, you know, give me a reason not to do a CAR T. So, you know, I'll ask you both sides of the equation. What in your mind is an optimal patient for CAR T? And on the other hand, are there certain features that you'll say, you know what, because of X, Y, or Z, I'm never going to do a CAR T in this patient?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I would say for me, the optimal cell therapy candidate. So first of all, let me say, who's the optimal patient for referral? All of them. Hey, maintenance, post-maintenance, early biochemical, I want to see them all. I want to see them all. I may not recommend cell therapy for all of them, but I want to see them all. So who described is optimal? So optimal means that, to me, optimal means that what are the likelihood they're going to have a great response with minimal toxicity. And there the data is clear, you know, early as possible, second line, low tumor burden, minimal comorbidities. That's the perfect picture. But what I think is important to say is that's not the only patients that benefit. You know, patients that are older, patients that have comorbidities, patients that have higher tumor burden, they can benefit as well. There might be some more risk, there might be some more toxicities associated with it, but that doesn't necessarily reduce their potential to be induced into remission for long term. So in terms of things that I really kind of worry about is that, you know, patients that have maybe, you know, some significant neurologic, you know, other diseases, like they might already have some Parkinsonism or other, you know, seizure disorder that I really kind of worry about. Is this, it could be hard for me to understand, is this patient having a neurotoxicity or is this patient, is this their baseline disease? So I kind of get worried in those scenarios. Patients that have, you know, significant infections that are very hard to clear or frequently develop frequent infections. I worry about those because those are the patients that I always delay infusions. If you have an infection, I delay infusion just because the risk for toxicities are higher. So if I see someone that is having frequent infections, I kind of worry about, is the cell therapy the best option for those patients? In patients that are, you know, have a short life expectancy. You know, this is an 85-year-old patient with significant heart disease, you know, and is bedbound, you know, will I see the patient for referral? Yes. But is this the best therapy to go for, you know, collection, bridging in the hospital to manage these things that fits along with the patient's goals? You know, probably not. I'd have the discussion with the patient, but there'd probably be something where I'd say I would recommend against it.
Yeah, I completely agree, you know, and I think at least my views have changed since approval and our community globally improving our understanding of who, how, where, when. There are relatively few patients that I see that are not CAR T candidates. And, you know, even some of the ones with more comorbidities, you know, we're deciding between bispecifics and CAR Ts. To me, that's the conversation of you won the lottery. Do you want a lump sum or do you want a monthly payment? And the benefit of the lump sum is that, I'm going to be on you during that initial phase and you're going to get immune recovery. So, I share your optimism that I think the percentage of people with relapsed myeloma that are CAR T ineligible is honestly shrinking.
Yeah, awesome. I agree. So another question. So patients who are younger, fitter, who have great support systems, are more likely to be candidates for CAR T cell therapy. So my question is that, are CAR T outcomes being engineered through patient selection? So what does this mean for data that's being used to support its earlier use?
Yeah. So, I think this brings up a couple of issues. One is, the average patient on a clinical trial is not the average patient that's going to walk into your clinic or my clinic. Trial patients are typically younger. They're typically fitter, fewer comorbidities. I saw someone in clinic this week who has four cancers. They're never going to be on a clinical trial ever. But there have been some really great data sets looking at real world outcomes of early and late relapse patients about getting T cell redirecting therapy, bispecific or CAR T, and in fact, doing better than what our other options are. So, to me, I think the collective data from the randomized early trials like KarMMa-3 and CARTITUDE-4, looking at early relapse CAR T, along with some of the great real-world comparison studies, including a great paper by Serbi Sadana, has really shown us that, I think no matter how you slice it, CAR T is, it's what's for dinner. No, CAR T is a really great option for many of our patients, even those that wouldn't have fit the eligibility for trial.
Yeah, absolutely agree wholeheartedly. The real-world data is very, very kind of reassuring that even patients that don't fit this kind of perfect clinical trial picture do well. And it should not be a concern that the numbers are kind of being falsely pumped up through that. And I think it's also kind of important to kind of recognize that even those patients that have maybe some comorbidities, have some toxicities that we're able to start identify in the future, if they have this kind of creatinine clearance, or if they have this tumor marker, if they have this, their outcomes are worse. Now, I spend a lot of time trying to identify these patients, and not to be able to say that you shouldn't get a cell therapy, but more in terms of, can I develop clinical trials, novel schemes to manage their toxicities, novel combination therapies to be able to understand that. So I think, being able to identify these patients is in saying you can't get the therapy, that's not the story. Really, the goal is that identifying them, trying to figure out, how can we mitigate their risk? How might we be able to develop clinical trials to improve their outcomes so it matches that kind of picture of the perfect clinical trial patient?
Awesome. And now I'm kind of excited because I get to ask the Andy Cohen Watch What Happens Live style question of what breaks down in the referral relationship between community oncologists and the CAR T centers, whose job it is to facilitate that relationship?
Well, so I think it's a relationship, right? So that's the operative word. It's like, who has more, who has the final say in a marriage, right? In theory, it should be equal. And so I think both the referrer as well as the cell therapy clinician have kind of equal say in equal kind of partnership. Overall, the primary referrer has more time with a patient. They're there through the entire story of the patient's kind of treatment journey. I'm there for a short period of time. But during that period of time, I'm not making decisions by myself. I'm including obviously the patient and the referrer in the thought process, my screening, my eligibility, my concern for risk, and my treatment plan. Do we need holding therapy? Do we need bridging therapy? So to me, this is a process that really requires, equality from the referrer as well as the cell therapy clinician. Now, that being said, I'm very invested in terms of growing cell therapy for our service because I think it's such an amazing technology and I know that we're not utilizing enough. So I want to be a champion for this in upstate New York. So that means I'm doing outreach to practices. I'm trying to develop in policies and practice to go, what are the barriers that are present to patients? What are the barriers to present to referrers? How can I address those barriers? How can I mitigate it? So, you know, we've talked at some other settings where I'm talking about how now I'm able to collect patients closer to home. If this is a patient that lives in Syracuse, I have a collection facility that I can send them to in Syracuse. If they're in Albany, we're trying to set one near the capital regions as well. So I think in terms of my role as an academic clinician, I, you know, am not a private medical oncologist seeing, you know, 40 patients a day. Part of my time spent not seeing patients to figure out how can I improve the utilization of cell therapy. So I think there is a role incumbent on us as academic cell therapy clinicians to go, how can we improve the access to this technology? How can I make it easier to refers and patients to be able to get these this therapy?
No, couldn't agree more. Although, you know, who in a marriage, I would say my wife gets 100% of the decisions. I will defer to her. She is the academic referring doctor.
That's probably best. You know, yes. I think that's probably well worth it.
No, but to your point, you know, I think the key here is, as you said, it's an ongoing relationship. This is not, it's not one call from the community to say, hey, Marco, give this patient a CAR T, and not one call from you saying, hey, they're back with you. You know, I provide my cell phone, as I'm sure you do. You know, we text back and forth. They say, hey, they've had a couple extra bowel movements. Do we need to, you know, hey, are you thinking about cyclospora or are you thinking about IEC colitis? So, you know, I think your points are extremely well taken there.
Great. So I have another question, and it's going to be about, since we're kind of talking about community cell therapy kind of relationship with clinicians and shared care of patients. So when you transition patients back to their community oncologists, how do you recommend that they are able to kind of manage these potential toxicities or screen for these toxicities? And what role do academic treatment centers in general play in supporting the management of these adverse events?
You know, I think this is a really important topic. And I think it's actually an evolution because, you know, I tell the local doc, anything other than the sniffles, give me a call. Because, you know, we're learning like on the fly about new toxicities. You know, I remember when we first started doing this, the local doc would say the patient's having diarrhea. And I would say, you know, do a stool culture and give them Imodium. And now with, you know, our better understanding of IC colitis, you know, I think our role is to say, oh, wait a minute, they're having that symptom. Let me get them into my academic GI counterpart who is not just going to scope them, but send specific tests to differentiate. Is this just an infection? Is this run of the mill? Or is this a CAR T related toxicity? Same thing from an infectious disease standpoint. You know, someone has a URI and you want to give them a Z-Pak, great. They're having fevers and you can't isolate why. Time to come back to the mothership to, you know, for extended viral panel testing. Could this be CMV or EBV reactivation? And maybe getting our ID colleagues who have more experience dealing with some of the atypical infections that we see with cellular therapy.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And it's been amazing to see in the last few years how rapidly we've been able to improve the recognition of some of these toxicities, and then how do we diagnose them, how do we grade them, and how do we manage them? You know, sometimes kind of seeing them kind of early when this starts getting discussed, it creates a little, you know, a little fear. It's like, oh man, this could be something bad. But a lot of times just being able to give it a name, you know, and talking about amongst ourselves, this worked, or this, you know, this didn't work, being able to share this data with ourselves, we're able to then kind of develop consensus kind of criteria and management schemes. And, you know, that was like it was for the movement disorders or the long-term neurotoxicities. I think we all feel relatively comfortable in terms of early identification, early intervention really does improve outcomes. And the same thing I think is going to be true for the ICE kind of colitis. It's, to me, that's the big thing we worry about now, just partly because we recognize it. There's probably been patients that we missed this, you know, early on, and it was only until it kind of happened again and again, we were like, this is something real, and then you hear about from other folks. So I am really kind of reassured that we're kind of learning a lot, but the barrier that comes, or the thing that happens to us, is we have to make sure this stuff gets communicated to our oncology or our referrer kind of partners about how our practice is changing. So it may have been just a couple of years ago, we weren't monitoring for ALC, where you weren't intervening for, you know, with prophylactic dex for ALCs, but now we are. And if that happens in the community within, you know, now that we're discharging patients quicker to the community, that has to be something the community has to kind of monitor as well, at least be able to offer them. What are we doing? Why are we recommending this as well? So I'm very kind of reassured that our toxicity management is improving, but it really is incumbent on us to make sure these advances are communicated to our referring partners.
Awesome. So, you know, I was worried it was going to come to this kind of upstate, downstate, you know, back and forth between the two of us. So I'm glad I get to ask this next question. For patients in a rural area or without a caregiver who can relocate for weeks, what can be done to improve access to novel cellular therapies?
Rural is a little bit more adept to upstate New York, because I'm not sure if Queens counts as rural, but absolutely. So I think this is an important problem. And if you look at a map of New York and you look at, you know, treatment centers, CAR T treatment centers, upstate New York is really kind of a desert. There's only two main treatment centers in upstate New York. It's us and Rochester. And there's a lot of people that live in upstate New York, but they would live in kind of an identified rural area. So to me, it's really kind of important. We consider ourselves, we're funded in part by the state. We're a New York Public Benefit Corporation. We consider ourselves to be New York's, you know, cancer center. No offense. But we have to kind of solve these type of problems. And for me, when you're talking about rural patients, it's about, you know, access to the expertise, transportation, caregivers, coordination. So every patient, every practice is going to be a little different, but we try to kind of, what are the big problems that occur again and again? And it's sometimes it's the distance back and forth. So I've said that we're able to collect patients closer to their home. So that is able to kind of make some barriers or reduce some of these barriers. It's not for all products, but we're trying to set that up so it is available for all products. Also, you know, telemedicine, seeing some of these initial visits, at least being able to kind of get in, plugged in our system, get the authorization process getting, rely on telemedicine, the shared care model, you know, holding therapy, bridging therapy, being able to happen in the patient's, you know, home, not necessarily in downtown Buffalo, being able to get the patient home back as quickly as possible and share their kind of long-term surveillance with the primary medical oncologist. So these are all kind of things that we've done to try to address and get this information out to patients and the referrers, because we don't want them to think that the barriers existed there 5 years ago are still there today. We're trying to solve these problems. And as we solve one, we just move another one up to the list that we have to kind of help this. And luckily, most of these standard care products include very generous support programs for the patients that can help things with like transportation and lodging and all these things like that. So there are resources available to the patients. And so we're trying to use them all as well as develop our own.
No, couldn't agree more. You know, access here is key. And, you know, one of the things that you bring up, which is, you know, the needs of in one group are going to be different than others. You know, I think there are many patients at your center and mine that the patients are screaming that they want it all outpatient. They don't want to be admitted to the hospital. But, you know, you have someone who may be a little older, maybe a little farther away. They may be the patient that we admit to the hospital for, you know, the whole thing, just to make sure that during those critical points, we don't have to worry about, you know, the patient having a toxicity and going to a local emergency room that may have no experience with how to manage acute onset toxicities of cellular therapy.
Yeah, absolutely. In wintertime, it snows every once in a while in Buffalo. And, you know, having an 85-year-old person having to drive through a snowstorm is not the most, you know, I do want to be able to go to heaven one day. So very happy to say, you know, hey, let's not do the outpatient thing. Let's admit you in the hospital to kind of manage this. So it's just really to highlight that, yes, there's lots of problems, but we can solve those problems if we kind of, you know, discuss them as a team. So let's kind of hit a little bit more on this kind of refer kind of treatment center relationship. So this is going to be, you're going to be thinking, I guess, as a community oncologist here. So what do you think are the biggest misconceptions that community oncologists still have about CAR T and myeloma regarding eligibility, toxicity, or outcomes that are keeping patients with myeloma being referred to a cell therapy treatment center.
Yeah. So in my mind, there's two big ones. And one is eligibility. And, you know, age is just a number. We all have 80-year-olds who are running marathons and 50-year-olds who come in wheelchairs after a quadruple bypass. So, you know, I've had, you know, local docs say, yeah, I didn't want to refer them because, you know, we talked about this patient previously and they weren't transplant eligible. So therefore, they're not CAR T eligible. And I think that's still a major misconception that's preventing some referrers. The other is that, you know, I think they're still under the misconception that CAR T is, you know, kind of a last line or a later line phenomenon and waiting to get through, you know, waiting until they're triple class refractory until they send them to people like you and me. And, you know, I think you've said a number of times, and I couldn't agree more, you know, the evaluation can be as early as you want. It may not be that time for a CAR T, but earlier evaluation is definitely warranted and not waiting until the patient is refractory to absolutely everything.
Yeah. You know, I think there's probably a lot of potential reasons, but for me, the one that I think may be present a lot is that the alternative seems easy. So whether it's a T-cell engager, whether it's, you know, some type of combination chemotherapy or something like that, it's just easier. Is that going, well, you know, we can certainly consider cell therapy, but, you know, you have to get referred, there's collection, there's toxicity, you can't drive, there's all these things. Let's just do a T-cell engager for now. And when you need it, you know, when you really need it, we'll figure it out then. And I don't think that's necessary. It's not, that's not, you know, wrong, or it's not, you know, it's nothing negative on their aspect. I really think it's just incomplete understanding of where the field is today. And because how our practices change within the last 5 years, the way we do things today within cell therapy, how quickly we can collect, how we can infuse, do this outpatient, minimize risk, get patients back home. These are things that have happened really just in the past few years. And, you know, community oncologists are treating every cancer and they're having to stay up to date with everything. So it's not a surprise they may not kind of appreciate some of these kind of rapid advances, or even not even that has to do with anything clinical. This is operational. This is logistical. So I think it's some of those things that are going, this is a lot of stuff. This is easier. I'll still get you into cell therapy, but maybe let's think about this next line, because the practitioner may have 10 or 15 minutes to be able to discuss this with the patient. Let's just kind of do something easy. And so it just, to me, it kind of reiterates that we really just have to kind of make sure all this information gets to, you know, patients, refers of how cell therapy is given today and the great outcomes, and, you know, how those outcomes be achieved with, you know, relatively easier processes than were 10 years ago.
Couldn't agree more. And, you know, it just is kind of a wrap up, because I, you know, it's a little scary how much you and I agree on things. And it's, you know, the old saying in myeloma, if you have two myeloma doctors, you're going to have three opinions, but we seem to have relatively close to one, which is fantastic. But, you know, I think that as a kind of final thing, you know, you have 2 minutes in front of a community oncologist who doesn't have your knowledge and understanding of CAR T cell therapy and myeloma. What would be your biggest, you know, pearls that you'd want to pass on of things that we've talked about today?
I think, you know, with refers and with even same with patients, is just, you know, highlighting why am I so pro cell therapy is the outcomes. You know, I want something, the entire goal of myeloma before the C word, maybe, I don't know, let's not go into that, was put the patient into remission as long as possible. And so for me, cell therapy is one of the best opportunities available for patients that put them into remission for years. That's the goal. So starting those conversations with referrers and patients, the reason I am very pro cell therapy is for that outcome. And that it's my job, you know, as a service chief and as a you know, cell therapy clinician, is to figure out how can I do this in a way where it's a easy process for the referrer to get the patients in, collected, you know, coordinate, holding, bridging, post care, so the referrer is not having to kind of do all this for every patient, that this falls on me and my team to solve a lot of these problems and make their lives easier. in letting the referrer know that this is, you know, an open line of communication, that if they have a question, you know, text me, call me, let's talk about it. You know, not just in terms of this patient eligible, but this is 3 months down the line. I want to know that the care, my role in the care doesn't end, you know, at day 15, that if they have a patient that receives a cell therapy 3 years, 4 years down the road, and they think this could be something, call me. And if it's easiest, send them back to me. I'll work everything up. You know, I wanted to try to really make the referrer's life easier for giving the patient this opportunity to be able to get intermission for years. So just really kind of reiterating that this is as a partnership or a relationship between the referrer and myself.
Yeah. And I love your sentiment that you stated about that early interaction. To me, that's the big one. And, you know, you said it best, you know, some of the things we're doing now, we've only been doing for months to a few years. And, you know, looking at CARTITUDE 5 and CARTITUDE 6 that, you know, I think you would agree are very likely to read out positive, there is going to come a day in the not too distant future where these therapies are approved in frontline therapy. So, you know, at getting patients in front of a cellular therapist, whether or not it may be a no, it may be not the right time or maybe a never, but without that evaluation of someone who does it every day like you, you know, I think this is a decision that needs to be made, at least to refer the patient early on and have that conversation very early on in the course. And again, to me, pretty soon, this is going to be part of our newly diagnosed strategy. So CAR T-cell therapy is really now, you know, deeply entrenched in the world of relapsed myeloma, soon to be likely entrenched in the newly diagnosed world. So, you know, these are therapies that I think we're all going to need to embrace, whether or not it's from an academic standpoint or a community standpoint, and really having that ongoing communication back and forth, especially as the field is moving so quickly, is absolutely key in providing optimal care for our patients.
Yeah, great. Well said. I really enjoyed this conversation. You know, we hit on really kind of what are the obstacles, you know, for patients, toxicities, refer, you know, access in terms of distance, refer kind of provider, cell therapy clinician, communication. There's a lot of issues that we're kind of working out, but really the motivation behind this is the technology is powerful. It delivers long-term remissions for many patients. And the goal of I think this discussion is just being able to share this information, what's working from my end, from your end, where do we see, you know, the pathways for improvement, and hopefully kind of just kind of sharing this information can spark some ideas from other referrers or cell therapy centers that might figure out even better ways to do this and then can share this information with the community in general. But, you know, very, very kind of excited with what cell and gene therapy has been doing for myeloma, and excited for, you know, the next 5 to 10 years to see what further advances we're going to have in the space using cell and gene therapy. And I'm very kind of happy that we're able to kind of deliver on this promise of research improving outcomes for patients, you know, is being delivered for patients. So really kind of happy with that. So want to say thanks for everyone that's kind of tuning in to this podcast, and hopefully able to learn something. And any questions for myself, feel free to send me an email, and happy to kind of talk through cell and gene therapy.